All right, welcome everybody. It's Wednesday, May 18th. Thanks for being on the webinar today. I've got Kevin Moore with us in the background as well. And just a few questions submitted for this evening. So if you do have any questions, you can go ahead and start to type those in if you would like. I'm going to start off with some industry news, and then we'll move into I'll start with some Note School information, and then we'll get into some industry news, and I'll get into the questions that were submitted, and then as time allows, I'll get into the other questions as well. So thanks, first of all, for being on. And first thing, you guys have probably heard this before already, but just in case, the Summer Summit event is being held at the American Airlines Conference Center, which also has a hotel as a part of it. And they're sold out, so our rooms are now completely sold out. So that's good news that we have a lot of people coming to the Summer Summit. That's great. For those of you who didn't make that decision early enough, we do have a list of several neighboring hotels that you can stay in, and they have called those hotels, and they have stated to us that they will provide shuttle service to and from the event center. So if you're coming to the Summer Summit and you haven't made reservations yet, now would be the time, because the conference center is sold out for rooms, so utilize one of those four hotels there, and they'll shuttle you back and forth. I also did put this form in your handout section, so if you're new to the call, if you look on your GoToWebinar panel on the right-hand side, go down to Handouts, and you'll see two documents. One's going to be the syllabus, and the other one is going to be the information on the Summer Summit. So if you're coming, get signed up, get registered. It's going to be a good event, a lot of good announcements and some new things coming, some new vendors. It's going to be a good one. All right, so you've got that. Now the next thing I'd like to do is give you a little industry info. We actually saw this in the class that we just did in Denver. And this came out, I think, on that Friday, May 13th, if that number makes Friday sense, I don't know. But it came out last week, and it was another big sale that Fannie Mae sold of non-performing loans. And once again, broken into pools, and this is how the industry works, just as a little bit of a refresher here. They broke that pool, which was 7,900 loans in $1.5 billion in unpaid balance, and they broke it into four pools. And you can see the various pools that they have there and the amounts that they have there. And you can see that they pay a lot more money for these things than you do. But don't forget, that's to buy the whole pool, right? And then what they do is they'll carve off what they consider the fat, which we consider the good stuff. They'll sell that on the open market down the road here in several months. So just again showing you the things that we're teaching you at the 3-day, this kind of brings it to life in the real world, if you will, because that's exactly how this works. And you're still seeing a lot of these pools have lengthy delinquencies, 48 months and 50 months, 50 months, 48 months, so you get the idea. So we have a lot more inventory coming our way in this industry, as we've been saying for a number of years now. What is a little bit troubling for some people, and what they didn't like about this, is the biggest buyer at this particular sale was a company which is owned by Goldman Sachs. Okay, so this company here is 99% owned by Goldman Sachs, and of course Goldman Sachs was one of the big players in the whole collapse of these financial instruments, by the way. So it's kind of interesting, we helped bail out to Goldman Sachs, and now Goldman Sachs is buying probably some of the notes they had a good hand in creating. They're buying those back, so it's a little interesting how that works. And like other companies, they do it under different names to try to avoid that publicity, but pretty hard to hide on this one. They were the biggest buyer in the last sale as well. So once again, I don't know what that's going to have as far as impact for us down the line, but it is going to be something where they will sell. Goldman Sachs is a financial company. They are nowhere prepared to take on these notes and get them reperforming or anything like that. So it's a pure money buy, and they'll do what the rest of the companies do. They'll keep the higher end stuff and carve off the rest and move those out of their portfolios. It's just, once again, they've got to buy the whole pool. They can't just pick and choose, you know, out of these 3,500 loans in this pool, maybe the only one in a thousand of them, but you know what? You got to buy all of them, and then they can sell off the rest of them. So thought you might find that interesting. We'll see some more inventory again coming down. So they're on pace this year. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the big banks, kind of along what we predicted last year. Average pace of about $1 billion per month is what we're going to see. So good, healthy inventory levels. I don't think you'll see it get superheated where they start to sell too many of these things, because again, the headlines may read, and you'll probably start to see this in the next couple of months because of these sales. The headlines are going to read how, oh boy, the inventory of non-performing notes is really gone down. And when you read those headlines, I want you to understand that what's gone down is the non-performing notes on the books of these banks and big securities companies. So when Bank of America and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac start to sell these off in large quantities, well, of course, the number of non-performing notes on their books is going to go down. But that's how the newspapers are going to spin it, trying to show that it's the economy is getting better and that sort of thing. And the fact of the matter is that once these notes come off of Bank of America and Merrill Lynch and all that, these were serviced by them, my apologies. Once these come off the books of Fannie Mae, it's not like they magically got workouts again. It's not like the homes were automatically fixed up. So there's definitely a drag system in that. So don't get fooled when you see the headlines saying how non-performing notes are getting smaller and smaller. Well, yeah, they're coming off the big books and moving into the cycle of the system. So there's a lot more coming, and it's going to take a significant amount of time to do this. So the time to move is now, and super inventory levels. Once again, we're still looking at 5 to 7 years of that. All right, so you got that info. And let's see. First thing I've got on for tonight that was some carryover information from last night. So by the way, when you submit this to content, and I'll try to get it on the call as far as timing goes, but also which call is more appropriate from time to time. And what happens sometimes on Tuesday, if they can't get to everything, it'll carry over to Wednesday calls. So this was a carryover from last night, and based on the emails, I don't know that Gary's able to be on the phone, but said he was going to look at the archives, okay, and go through that. And you're okay with that too, folks. If you have content that you want covered, but you're not going to be able to be live on the call, we prefer that you are. But if you can't, we'll be glad to cover it, and then you can go back and listen to the archives. So I think that's what we have in this situation here. All right, let's see if I have, before I move forward, if I have any questions on what I just said. Kathy is talking about looking at the statute of limitations, and won't that become an issue on these notes here, on this pool? And you know, there's a lot of attorneys pushing this limitation statute, but it's not going to hold any water. It's just not. There might be an isolated case here or there that makes some headlines, but just imagine if all of a sudden on all these loans that there's the blanket ruling comes across the country, and it says, okay, if you didn't do a certain thing within 4 years, then everybody owns their home free and clear, and the houses are you know, the debt's eliminated. It's just not going to happen. It's just not. So what they're looking at is, when do certain letters have to go out? When a note is exchanged, letters go out. So I don't think, Kathy, that's going to be an issue at all. It's one of those things that flared up for a while, almost like, in a different way, robo-signing. You know, where robo-signing was this huge buzzword, and everybody was going to be able to dispute the debt and keep their homes for free because the banks did robo-signing. And then what happened? Nothing. A judge said, nope, that's nonsense, threw it out, and you haven't heard about it since. So the statute of limitation thing is an issue that they're trying to make something of, but I just don't see it gaining any traction at all. All right. I am going to mute myself just for a moment here. You can hear there's a big fire truck going by. All right, sorry about that. And let's see. Okay, that was the. Somebody wants the article posted there. Sure can. I'll. What I'll do is just put the address. It's in. If you've been on this this call, I always mention the various publications that I read on a regular basis. With Housing Wire, I read it. The easiest way for me to get the industry news, by the way, and I don't know if you're you like getting that news or not, but if you're on Twitter, on a Twitter account, if you I don't know what you call it, follow. Yeah, if you follow Housing Wire and that sort of thing, Market Watch, all those things, you'll be able to go through your Twitter and see if there's industry news that's of importance to you. So many times I'll do that instead of having to read the headlines and such all the time. So Housing Wire's on there. If you're on Twitter, so am I. So, and Note School and everything else as well. And by the way, on our Twitter account and our Facebook account for Note School, we do put about a video a month up there. Right now, sometimes a little bit more. I just recorded another video this morning on time value of money, just a little 5-6 minute video. So, for those on Twitter and Facebook, you got that. All right, let's see. So I need to post that article. What I'll do is I'll put the article on the syllabus, and then I shall repost this at the end. Okay, so let's see. I think I can move this around. All right, let's get into the questions that were submitted here. So Gary is looking at a note, and as a part of their due diligence, they started going through some of the documentation, and they ran into some issues. This note is in Ohio, and apparently they called and it said, in spite of the borrower not paying taxes since at least 2012, if not from before, the county did not put any tax lien on the property. Why is that? The county does place tax liens on properties in general, and there are sheriff sales pursued periodically. Second question was also dealing with these delinquent taxes. Is it a case that the delinquent property taxes stay on the property in spite of the ownership change or in spite of foreclosing? So what happens? Okay, Ohio's a little quirky when it comes to tax liens and deeds. So if you go to this website for Ohio, okay, and this is the Franklin County Treasurer's website, and I believe I posted this before, so it's not the first time this came up. And let's see here. On this website, and I'll put it on the syllabus there for everybody, on this website they will talk about how the tax lien system works. And again, tax liens are the state decides how what system is, tax lien or tax deed, and then the counties can operate within the state law. Okay, so state law dictates the whole thing, and then each county can be a little bit different as long as they're operating underneath the state law. For example, if the state law says they can hold these sales at least once per year, or they have to have these sales at least once per year, well, then Franklin County might say, well, we'll do it twice a year. They met the letter of the law, which said at least once per year, where another county might say, no, we'll just do it once per year. So that's all I mean by that. And this gives you a really good, in this website, it gives you a really good understanding of how it works there in Ohio. So you can see they've made some revisions to their tax laws. No problem with that. All tax lien certificates are bundled and sold as a part of a single portfolio. Okay, the treasury liens are transferred to the purchaser, who is entitled to recover the purchase price and accruing interest. Unlike other states, Ohio law does not provide for the sale of individual tax lien certificates or over-the-counter liens. The over-the-counter liens are the ones that don't sell at auction, but anybody can go down and buy at the courthouse. So rather than selling these to multiple people all at one time, what Ohio has decided to do is just take all the ones that are eligible and sell the whole thing as a single portfolio. Okay. So if that's what they have decided to do and they pass laws on that, that's what they then shall proceed with. So here's some of the wrinkles on this, and this is what they ran into here. All Franklin County properties with the delinquent taxes are eligible and sold at the tax certificate sale. To be eligible, the property may not already be set for a sheriff's sale. Okay. So in other words, if it's already being scheduled for a foreclosure sale for non-performance of mortgage, if it's in a bankruptcy, if it already has a contract, some kind of payment period, or some kind of payout, I should say, or if it's tax exempt or pending tax exempt. Okay. They then bundle all these things up and sell them to one big buyer. Here's the other thing. They don't do this right away. Prior to a tax lien certificate being sold, the property owner will have at least 3 to 4 tax bills. Okay? So they let these things go 3 to 4 years before they bundle them up and then sell them to one big buyer as a single portfolio. So that's why sometimes in Ohio you're going, well, gee, I don't see where a tax lien certificate has been sold on this, and it hasn't, because Ohio lets people go 3-4 years, in some cases even more, before they consider the property eligible to be sold through a tax lien sale. Okay, let's see. Also have received multiple notices, including upcoming sale information. In addition, the property owner and property location will have been published in the newspaper. Okay. Let's see. Other information here. When you click on these other links, you get all the different phone numbers and how they work. So if you're buying a non-performing note in Ohio and you have questions on that, this is a really good website to go to. It's got all the best numbers. Well, this is Franklin County. My apologies. Good state information, but also Franklin County. All of the numbers are here. There is a one-year redemption period. Okay, so if the property has been delinquent for 3 or 4 years, and then the state and the county proceed with putting on a tax lien sale, it's a year after that sale before the property can be sold. So it can still be redeemed within that period of time. Okay. And then this one, even though it says buyer information link, I would click on that one as well, even though you're not going to be buying these assets, because it does have a good information on where the list of properties are. So, in other words, if you're buying a non-performing note and you're concerned about it here in Ohio because you don't see any lien issued in the county, what you may want to do is get the list of properties that are scheduled to be sold and see if your property is on there. That would be one way to do it, or call the phone number there and they can let you know as well. Okay, then the finalized list, all those sorts of things. How they're recorded, buyer's right of redemption, how the interest rate is calculated. So once again, all of these links are sublinks to the main article here. This one is buyer information link, and that gives you all of this as well. So that's a little different than what they do in other states. Now, if you're looking for a general education, a basic education on these, again, if you go to training and non-performing and click on the mini lessons, you'll find 5 videos here, tax liens or deeds, where I go through the whole thing in general terms. And then when you're buying these instruments, again, it's a good idea to go ahead and find out the information on this. Now, how did I find this website? Well, once again, not hard, right? I went to Google. I put in Franklin County, Ohio, property tax liens. So you could do that in other counties, and there you go. Gives you all the information right there. Here's a list of the final sale of assets. That was about a $4 million sale that they had in 2015. All right. Let's see now. So in spite of that, normally, as you all know, sometimes I write notes in here, but that's a little too lengthy for me to type all of that out. So I'm going to put this to help everybody, and I'll just highlight that in blue, or in yellow, I should say. All right. In the case of delinquent taxes, especially when the tax liens with the property in spite of ownership change, so all of questions 3 and 4 there, that's really all answered through what we just discussed and the website here below. Okay. Go. And once again, for those who aren't familiar, at the end of this, a couple minutes before we're done, I'll drag and drop this into your handouts as well, so you can have the notes that we typed in as well. Also, all right. Question 5: if the answer is yes to the above two questions, when is the original borrower ever pursued to pay the taxes? Okay, I think we answered that one as well. The lawn change of this property doesn't seem to match. Okay, so these were all tax related questions there that are all going to be answered through that website. Might even take you a follow-up phone call on some of that on the phone numbers that are in there, but I think we covered it pretty well. The sixth question is dealing with the lawn change of this property doesn't seem to match up with the assignment change. Perhaps we're not seeing something. Can you help us understand this as well? Okay, so different topic here. Before I get into that topic, let me just double check over here to make sure. All right, Bill's still saying those videos are not working. So let's... So Bill, it looks...
Into this. And again, this is really meant to be the basics. This is not the know-all, end-all of tax liens and tax deeds, but... As noted,
okay, so Bill, you just saw it live in front of you there. They're working, so I'm not sure if you need to update something on your computer or what that might be, but I'll click on another one just in case. And
on a tax deed.
Yeah, everything's working. So, sorry, Bill, don't know what to tell you on that. Don't know what browser you might be using. I'm using Safari, but I know people use Chrome, so I don't know what to tell you, Bill. Go to 4 minutes on video two. Okay.
And one. Okay. So what they're saying in this example, then, and I'm using Florida as an example, it's a tax lien state, 3-4, who wants to open the bid? And somebody says, I'll buy that tax lien certificate for 18%.
Right? Something happened there. Okay. Just after 4 minutes.
3-4.
Gotcha.
Who wants to open the bid? And somebody says, I'll buy that tax lien certificate for 18%.
Okay. All right. Got it. Okay. Now I knew where to look, and we shall get that. Let me just do it right now, everybody, and I'll just email Serena. Okay, thanks for letting us know, and anytime that sort of thing happens, and I know I've seen his emails about that, but that's the first time that at least I've seen where you told me specifically where to look. And then I can get that into her. Okay, so I am sending that to Zarina right now, and hopefully we can have those reloaded up there. Okay, thank you for that. And let's see. Okay. Okay. I gotcha. All right. Let's see. Classes we can have. I will be on my best, Brian. I promise. Brian's bringing his son to class, and Irving coming up here, and yeah. So at the training coming up, I'll be doing part of the first day over at the Summer Summit, I believe, and then the second day I'll be teaching at the Rich Rewards. And I think Eddie's doing the third day on that one as well. Okay. Got it. All right, good. And we're back. So what they were looking at was this information. Let me just get rid of some of this. They were looking at the county's records. They were looking at the Allonge, and they couldn't see where all the pieces fit into place. And that can happen from time to time. And if we take a look at this one, so this is on the same deal, but we're now looking at the assignments and the Allonges. And just as a refresher, the Allonge and endorsement is how the notes are assigned over, where the assignment is how the security instrument, excuse me, the security instrument is assigned over. So on this one, this looks like the county, county records here is what they were looking at. And some counties are better at this than others, but this one's pretty easy to read here. Goes back in this property, the whole history of this thing, going all the way back to 1998. And based on the other documents, we do see where Graffitt's Real Estate takes over on this mortgage here. Okay, so it looked like the property was probably paid off in 2006 or refinanced because this loan was released, and then there was another note placed on here, I'm sure. So Graffitt's went to Granite, and then Granite Recovery Fund got it to Colonial Impact Fund. So that's just the general sense of what we can see. When you get printouts like this, I always like to read them from the bottom up rather than the top down, so that way you can kind of look at it chronologically if that helps you. So they had this mortgage. The mortgage was then at Graffitt's. Graffitt's assigned it over. Granite, and then Colonial. Okay. So then they looked at this. And that shows the ownership of the property, so that's not the question. The question deals with the mortgages. So in this case, you've got the mortgages back in 2006, and that's the one that was, well, let's see, his nominee. Okay, open it. It's a closed-end mortgage, so it's not an equity line or anything like that. So when you see closed, see where it says open-end? Try to make that bigger for you. When it says open end, it says closed. That just means that it's a term limited loan. It's not like a home equity loan, you know, where you can it's open ended, where you can borrow money and then pay it back and borrow more, etc. All right, so that was the 2006 mortgage. Matches up kind of with the date that we had there, and that was with GMFS. And let's see, GFMS. I'm wondering if that's the initials. Okay. GFMS. Yeah, I'm not really seeing that. It's probably something with Graffitt's here, but don't know. Let's see. They went into the MERS system. No problem there. Okay. Oh no. Then it comes over here to Graffitt's. Okay. And that was later in 2014. This shows 2015, 2013 assignment here. Okay. So yeah, somewhere in here, it's probably this one. They probably paid off one mortgage and got another mortgage here. This just has MERS on. It doesn't have. So I'm thinking whatever company it was that did that loan, probably somewhere in here, and then it was assigned over to this Graffitt's Real Estate LLC. And then Graphis got it over to Granite. Okay, that we can kind of follow here. And then Granite just switched it in between their trust fund and their recovery fund. So the recovery fund now has that one. Okay, a little tricky to follow, I agree on this one, simply because the way it's laid out there, but I think you can see the overall trend of this. Now, this probably wasn't run, see, this was done in 2015, and you can see that the Colonial assignment of mortgage here, that didn't happen until 2016. So this title report's obviously a little bit older. So this would be one of those cases, if I was looking at this at home, I can generally see what happened here, and I'm okay with it. It's not raising like any red flags on anything in my mind. But I would order another title report from this one, just me. I mean, it's a year old, so let's run another one, and that would include some of these other items that we can't see in this particular report, but nothing weird there. And then this, I'm assuming, because this was just sent separately in the email that I received, and again, these notes, the way they're transferred, could there be a better system? Yeah, but you know what? This is currently how it works there. So it is a little, well, who went where? Well, we can see this GFMS company, and that matches up over here, I believe. Yeah, GMFS and GMFS here. And then it was, again, it went from JP Morgan Chase to residential funding. And then it launched over to, yeah, it's just a tricky one to figure out. It's saying in favor of, this was, let's see. Again, if we look at all the other evidence, it went from that company over to, I wonder if they got it from, see, what we don't see here are some of these other mortgages. So I'm looking at this thinking it goes to GMFS, and we're missing other Alanges here. So this is another one of those cases. If I'm at home and I'm interested in buying this note, again, they're not perfect. We don't know all the answers here. I'm going to send an email back to offerings@colonialfundinggroup.com and just and of course do what you did here, get it on the call. But from we may have other documents that for whatever reason didn't get scanned in that we may be able to pull for you. So this may be something that Charles and his staff has to pull the actual documents again and see what we have that might be missing here. But it's also one of those two where because there's an older title report, I would get another title report run as well. So that's the best way that I can really answer this one. I see the general trend of where it is. I can't see the physical proof of where it went after this particular Alange. So chances are we have it. It just didn't get put into the file. Email offerings for that information, and then Charles can give you a rundown on that as well, or somebody in Charles's staff can do that for you. So that's really the best answer that I can give you on that, unless, Kevin, I know you're kind of hovering in the background there, unless you have any other input on that.
Yeah, I'm looking at this, and just I know who GMFS is, and I can't see the dates on the paperwork you're looking at here, because I'm looking at he evidently went through kind of a refinancing flurry here, mm-hmm. and then it got locked in, and it's been assigned. So I'd just be focused on number six, number five, number four, number three. And that should take care of it, because he just had a flurry of refis, and then it just got assigned. And yeah. GMAC, so GMFS was the original lender. Nationwide, they were their own bank. And then GMAC is RFC, so they're just moving stuff around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the dates make sense for all. I mean, you're looking at 2006 and all that, when all this kind of and that's the perfect time when people are refinancing, right? I mean, money was cheap, it was easy to get, property values were like this, So that all completely makes sense. And again, nothing that would scare me off. It's just, again, knowing that, you know, how these things are recorded isn't as precise as some people would like. I think you can see the general story, but, you know, again, we get a new report, you contact the office and you see where it is and then make a decision from there.
Yeah, plus, it's not a major issue, but it's always just a wrinkle. You know, the good news, too, is, look, it says release of child support lien, so you know the guy's around and he's paying. So, this one, like you said, let's just update it and go from there. I'm thinking this is just a little ripple. This is definitely not a tidal wave in terms of problems.
Right. All right, sounds good. Let's see. Now, the other one of – okay, great. Oh, I didn't look for Tom, but okay. Let me see here. Where is everybody? Attendees. Just looking. Okay, there's Tom. Tom Patella, are you the Tom they're referring to here?
Yes. Hi, Kevin.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. Did we answer that for you? I didn't notice
yes.
that until just
yes,
now.
Yes, you did. Okay, I'm considering that. I mean, it's a back taxes is about 15,000, and BPO is about 55. Mm-hmm. So, and plus the inside work will be about 18,000. So I don't think it is worth it to buy this note.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you have any suggestion for this strategy?
Good, but I'll put this syllabus into your drop folder so you'll have those websites for another time. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Alrighty, let's see. Next one here. Do I need to send in a launch to the county to be recorded? And the answer is no. The launches do not get recorded. You only record the security instrument. Okay, so mortgage, note, or not, sorry, doing too many things at once. Mortgage, deed of trust, those sorts of things. That's what you're gonna record. Now, if it's a land contract, again, that's where it can get a little different. With the land contract, you kind of look at, well, what was recorded before, and now what do I need to do? And we have a really good PowerPoint presentation that Susan put together for that. And that one, if you go to training and you go to on-demand training and click here for the Summer Summit from 2015, and Susan did a whole presentation on that. Angie did a presentation on working with the trade desk. So we did a lot of different presentations on what happens after you wire the funds. And this one right here, it's called Pre-Fund and Closing with Susan De La Garza. So it is in the fourth row on the right-hand side. She goes into that pretty clearly there on what to do as far as recording land contracts. And that's the only one that's quirky. The easy ones are, you know, mortgage and deed of trust. You just always record those and you don't record the note. But the land contract depends upon the state. Some states look at a land contract as both documents, the security agreement as well as the note. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes it's looked upon where you'll get a quitclaim deed to the property, and if that was recorded before, you want to record yours because, again, that's the security in that particular case, and you want to have your chain of title there. If it's an assignment of beneficial interest, then you're looking at, well, was the other one recorded or not? And that video will go through and explain that for you as well. And you can also, just by extension, you can have your servicing company do that, or you can mail it off to the county as well. Always a good idea to call the county if you're ever going to record it yourself. Call them up, find out what the process is, if they have a flat fee or if they take a credit card, that way they can determine the fee, that sort of thing, and just, you know, make a copy of the original, send the original, FedEx, UPS, whatever, something trackable, little letter inside there, and then please put a return envelope prepaid in there also so they can pop it back and send it back to you by FedEx or UPS. Okay. All right. So let's see what other questions we might have here. Yes. This particular video, if you go to training, on the left-hand side, just you got performing, non-performing, and then on-demand. So go to training, go to on-demand. Let's see if I can make it a little bit bigger. Go to on-demand, and then go to this banner here, 2015 Summer Summit, and just click on it. And that'll open up all these videos. And for the one in particular we're talking about, it's the fourth row on the right. That one right there. Okay. All right, so let me get to the top here. What about hardest hit funds in Michigan? And I think that came in before the call when I was just asking Kevin Moore if he had an update on that. But let's see, Michael is asking about that. They do have funds allotted as of May 1st. Oh, good. So they've been dispersed already, $74 million. And he's trying to get the borrowers to pay for that right now. So I don't know that we have an update for you other than what you already have there, Michael, and what they do. Again, my inclination is that they want and need to spend that money, and that's why they have been given more. Part of the condition for the second round of funding this summer, by the way, is how quickly they allocate and how efficiently they allocate these funds. So I would expect this to be a little bit more streamlined on this one. So let's check that. But Kevin, do you have anything specific on Michigan that might?
I am just in the middle. Kevin, as you know, I've been out traveling with you at the events and speaking, so I'm about a week and a half behind. I will have an update ready for next Wednesday because they're having a little bit of a challenge where they're trying to call back some of the funds that they had originally allocated for what they were calling stabilization, which means basically the money to knock down houses, and they're having a little problem. So I'll have an update ready for everybody for next week.
Okay, great. So everybody tune in next week on that, and we'll have some additional research for you on just that. But that's good good news. Good news. Yeah, the reason they did that, by the way, there was four states, I think, if you go back in our archives a while back, we talked about this, but there are about four or five states that did another amendment to their initial agreement with the Treasury Department to find another way to allocate these funds. And one of the ways for some of the states was, we got to tear down some of these houses that have just been sitting there endlessly. And that does come into a problem when you do have states that won't allow a foreclosure to happen until property taxes are paid and they let them accrue penalties and things like that. The idea, again, was to punish the banks, but it's not punishing the banks. It's obvious. The banks aren't going to hang on to this. They're selling it off, and if there's no profit in the deal, how's somebody going to buy it? How's somebody going to resolve that problem? So instead of going to the real true problem of what that was, the states just decided, well, let's allocate money, and then we'll work with a lender, and we'll just tear down the properties and compensate them that way. And that's really kind of where that came out of. And shocker, as Kevin just said, they're having some issues with that. And, gee, I wonder if there was any fraud involved with any of that, where people are saying, well, yeah, it's a tear down and getting approval and all of a sudden getting $30,000 on a house that was about to fall down. I mean, so... that's probably where that has come from. But
Or they went in and they bought up blocks of properties that were supposed to go to tax sale, and they used stabilization and land bank money, and then said, you know, we're doing it to help everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But mostly ourselves, right?
it's the company. Yes.
We're going to help everybody, mostly us. But yeah.
Yes.
Yep. I got you. All right, Fred. Kevin, I understand there's something new about underwater mortgages in New York. I understand. Let's see here. Let me get. I'll put it right here. I understand there's something new about underwater mortgages in New York. Can you talk about it?
They've got a lot of them.
I don't. Let me see if I can find you, Fred, and maybe you can give me a little more info. I'm drawing a blank. Hey, Fred? Fred Boyd? Got your mic open. Don't know if you can talk or not. All right, I'll leave you open for a minute there. Don't know anything about that. Now, what I'm thinking is where that may have come from is we do have a case study that I utilize in class. It involves a program that the attorney's office has put together, and actually, you know what, let me do it this way. That way everybody can know where it is. If you go to websites, okay, under resources, go to helpful websites, scroll down here under hardest hit funds, and there's one that says New York Mortgage Assistance. So again, resources, helpful websites, under hardest hit funds, New York Mortgage Assistant. If you click on that, it will take you here. And this program is run through the Attorney General's office. And in class, I talk about this, and that's maybe where you heard something about this, Fred, because a lot of states are looking at this program New York has created with the hopes of replicating something like it in their own state. Because what's happening right now is banks are settling a lot of these lawsuits that have been around for a number of years when it came to writing bad loans. And the banks are just signing off on those lawsuits, and the state attorney general offices in a lot of states are getting a heck of a lot of money. And New York took that money and created this program to help people out. Now, you can go back and read through this website, so maybe they did make some changes on this, but my understanding is it works more like a hardest hit fund type of transaction where they will catch somebody up, make their mortgage payments for them. So again, it's designed to keep them in their home. The example we use in class was actually a short payoff where New York in this case wasn't willing to make the mortgage payments for this person because quite frankly she couldn't make enough money to pay it back. So what they did was they offered our students, Jay and Gladys, they offered our students $40,000 as payment in full, and I think they were owed $60,000 some odd, including arrearage and everything else. And obviously, they took that deal because it was they didn't pay nearly that for the note. So that's the only thing in New York that I'm familiar with when it comes to these programs. So if anybody knows on the call something different than that, let me know. So I'll do this. Copy that one and put that here. All right. Okie dokie. That's all I got on that. Sarah. Let's see what Sarah's got. So on the deed paperwork that I'm sending into the county, there's a note from the preparing lawyer in the upper left-hand corner to return the documents to her. Is this for me to do after I get recorded documents back from the county? I don't know. If your attorney prepared the documents, he is simply having them sent back to you, and then we'll get you copies. That would be my my assumption. Tell him that the best typist in the world. that's all I'm thinking there is just that preparing. Yeah, that's all. It's a part of their service to get him back, so nothing more to it than that. Okay. Yeah, let's see. I don't know if you can see the questions, Kevin, but Lisa out in California is saying, oh, Kevin Moore with the teaser for next week's call. Huh?
There you go. Set it up, Lisa.
Let's see. If there's a no tax due on the report included in the offering, offerings collateral file, is it safe to assume that the taxes are current? If there's no tax due on the report, and I'm assuming you mean the tax report in the file that we ordered, or someone had ordered. If that's the case, yes, it should be okay, and you'll notice my verb is there, right? My little legal loophole. It should be okay, but you can always re-verify, right? Okay, so we've got that report, and then how would you re-verify this? Well, through the county, you know, and public records, and see if it's on there. And that might be online, or that might be a phone call that you make. Okay, but yes, we run that report and we pay for that report. Now, if look at the date too. If it's a older title report, then you want an updated one. But if it's that separate tax report and it's new and it shows current, you should be good on that one. But I can never just assume. You can always make a quick phone call, a quick search of public records just to verify. All right. I'm trying to record my deed for non-performing loan in North Carolina. The county was providing me recording costs for the deed. The county then asked if I needed to pay stamp fees. She continued saying that if the deed has an amount listed in the deed, there's stamp fees based upon that amount. Yes, my deed from Colonial does not list an amount on the deed, so does that mean I pay zero for the transfer report? That's what I would go with. In a lot of states, that's what they do. They'll charge on a transfer amount, and in Florida, what we do all the time in Florida, if I have multiple entities with multiple properties, and sometimes I'd need to shift one entity from another. It might have been a short-term property. I'm now going to keep long-term or something like that. And what you would do on that is I would just say a quit claim deed from my company number one to my company number two. And I would always put a value in there of $10. And that's why you see in a lot of states, when you look up quit claim deeds, it's always 10 bucks. Well, that has nothing to do with the fair market value of the property. I put $10 because I'm paying taxes on that value amount. So if there's no value amount in their consideration, I would put it through and they charge you no tax. If they kick it back and say there has to be a value on there, well, I'm going to use a very low number for that. Okay? And I'll just leave it at... leave it at that. I word that accurately there, Kev?
Yes, you did.
Dancing around it? All right. Lisa, are you leaning on your keyboard? You got a cat crawling across it there? Something's going nuts. You sent me about eight different texts on there with Greek writing on there. So I don't know what you were trying to send me there, but it didn't come through on my end. Let's see. Gotcha. Kevin, you told something about her? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's Patricia. Patricia got me on a, she was in her class in Denver, and I photobombed one of her pictures of the screens, and then she got me because she went ahead and posted it on Twitter as well. So you one-upped me on that one. But yes, that's what I was talking to on New York. Yeah, but I don't remember the New York program being for that properties were underwater, or in, what we mean by that is upside down. I don't know if the New York program helps with that, because we did talk about our hardest hit funds principal. to all you guys too, because I do update it from time to time, and I can update it quicker than they can on the website. But I'll just drag and drop that into your handout section. And there are some states that do have principal reduction. Okay, so maybe the two issues were confused here. But principal reduction here, this is California. They'll pay up to $100,000. This is Florida's program. They pay up to $50,000. This one is Arizona. Oops. And what else we have here? Nevada, $50,000. And there may be more. And I tell people all the time, I try my best to go back and look at all the various various states, but you know, only 24 hours in a day kind of thing. So do check on these states coming up here, because the new money is just starting to hit now this summer. So they may very well change their programs. And if you want to know once again where that is, I'll just do this quick because it comes up quite a bit. Treasury Department is the website. You just Google search it. It's the first one, or it's right under the ad. And then you can look in the reports every month. Quickest way to do it, if you're keeping up on it, when you click on reports, look for the congressional report. It comes out on the 10th of the month every month, and it's a month behind. So the May report is posted, and the May report is posted, which will report on April. You go to page 4. On page 4, you can see here are program changes in April that 7 states did. Okay, so I mean, look, here's one: unemployed bridge program has removed its job training requirement. Okay, that can be significant for some of you. Maybe you've got somebody who's unemployed and living in one of those properties, and whatever, they're disabled, they weren't able to get job training. Well, it's no longer a requirement in that state. Principal reduction, oh, there you go. Okay, so there's California's principal reduction they have. Probably threw some more money at that. But this is where they'll tell you what new programs that they have enacted. Okay, unemployment here as well. And then you can go to the actual state. Okay, then you come back here and go to state-by-state information. And then you click on whatever state you are interested in and read the amendments. Okay, so if you open these amendments, that'll further explain the new program or the change in the program that they made. All right, the New York one is run by the state, completely different. No problem, Lisa. Okay, looks like the last one here. If we do due diligence on a non-performing loan and we learn that the value was like $1,000, but Colonial's charging $17,500 with a BPO of $35,000, is there room to negotiate? In fact, my partner who drove the house said I should get paid $3,000 to take it off their hands. $10,000 back taxes codes. Yeah, here's the deal. On any of these things, if you have factual information and you have documentation or you have photos, anything like that on items that we're not familiar with, and this happens in this business. We ordered a BPO. I don't know when the date of that BPO was done. Could something have happened to that house since we ordered the BPO? Sure. We don't have a way of knowing that unless it's a property that's being inspected on a regular basis. So if you have any factual information, then yes, submit that, show it to us, we can verify that information, and then we got to figure out what we're going to do with it. So if it's something that we own, then obviously that's going to be our issue, and we'll keep it, we'll work it out, we'll do whatever it takes. So that's why in the class, and you've all heard me say this before in the class, I'm saying, look, I don't care who you're buying a note from, even Colonial, it's always trust but verify. And everybody at Colonial will tell you the same thing. Even our assets, you have to go back and verify everything. That's just a smart way to do business. Now with ours, you have less of that because we do provide all the documentation and the paperwork, where some other places you've got a lot more due diligence to do because they don't even provide all those BPOs. So you did the right thing here, which was you had somebody who happened to be close by. They went back out and took a look at it. So I don't know. Is that where we needed another opinion on that, or indeed did something happen to the house and there's been a change on that? Yeah, let us know for sure. And then we'll turn it over to Charles and his team. They'll do what we tell you to do, is verify that information, and then he'll make a call from there, a judgment call on that. Okay? So no problem, Michael. Thank you. All right. Let's see. I'm going to save this, and I'm going to drop this into your folder here again. So for those of you, I did have someone tell me this weekend they love it when I type some stuff in there. They keep these and refer back to them. So I'm going to start doing that as much as I can. Obviously, on some of them, I just can't type that. All of that, and need you to listen to the audio. But when I can, I'll type them in there, and the websites that we use, all that sort of stuff, so we can help you out with that. I was also requested to keep it up there a little longer before I close down the webinar, because I think it was Les. Wasn't it Les? It was at the last class. He's like, I live out in the boonies. Oh, no. Who was it? Oh, gosh.
Yeah. He's got the turtle, the slow ski. He's got the slow internet.
Like a crank. So if you keep it up a little longer, I can download it. And what he meant was in that folder there. So I think I've given you plenty of time on that. So you've got the Hardest Hit Fund. That's the latest one that I have. Government programs. I think I included those links on there as well. State by state. And also the reports showed you how to do that as well. And let's see, Summer Summit, you've heard of it, it's coming up, so need to watch a video on it, and maybe you just got started with us, click here on that and watch the video, and we'll have a special early bonus day there on the asset preservation, and there's all of the dates. We have a Rich Rewards class running simultaneously with that, so you will see some students as well as instructors going back and forth. One's going to be upstairs and one's going to be downstairs, and as a member, you can attend either one. You're probably more inclined to be at the Summer Summit, but some of you may not have been to a Rich Reward class or want to repeat a portion of it, and of course, you're always welcome to do that. So take a look at those videos, and hope to see you out there. And Kevin, unless you got anything else?
I am good.
Sounds good. All right, everybody. Thanks for being on the webinar. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you learned something, and look forward to working with you in the future. Have a good night.